It was just the level of injustice this time, the level of injustice hurt Israel so much, exposes its intention. And you cannot keep hiding behind the victim card. You're not a victim anymore. You actually victimized another.
Today, I have a very special guest on the podcast, filmmaker Mohammed Alater. Mohammed is Palestinian, born in the West Bank, raised in Jordan, and educated in the United States, where he became an American citizen. At the age of 40, though, he decided to return to the city of Ramallah in the West Bank in Palestine to become a documentary filmmaker and tell the story of the Palestinian people. He's made 6 documentaries on the subject so far, and each of them is beautifully rendered and deeply moving, a testament to his unwavering respect for human rights. Even as he experiences the excruciating pain of watching fellow Palestinians die each day in horrifying numbers, both in Gaza and also in the West Bank, he fights hard to hold on to his own humanity, shunning hate and holding hard to a wish for a peaceful future. Mohammed is an incredible human being, which you will get a glimpse of during our conversation, in which nothing is left off the table. Hello, Mohammed, and welcome to How We Change the World podcast.
Hello, my old friend. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, I hadn't seen you in such a long time. It was the only way I could figure out how to talk to you again. So now it worked.
Technology.
So, Mohammed, that's right. We'll take what we can get. So, you are in Ramallah as we speak. It looks like your lights are going off and on. I don't know if that's true or not. Just for people listening and watching, we are maybe going to have a few technical glitches because of the speed of the internet and all sorts of things that we're dealing with, but we'll do our best. I'm trying to think, Mohammed, so you're in Ramallah, you're in Palestine, you're in occupied, Israeli-occupied West Bank. Where are you from originally? Is that where you were born, or where are you from originally? Where were you born and raised?
No, I'm originally from the north of the West Bank, from Jenin.
Jenin?
Yes, I'm from Jenin, and I was raised in Jordan. My family get kicked out, and I was raised in Jordan. And when I was 23, I went to the U.S. I was in the U.S. until I was 40. Then I moved back here.
Really?
Yeah.
And where in the U.S. were you, in Texas?
Texas, Chicago, a bit of California. I moved around. I love the U.S. I love the land, the people. Not a good friend with the government. Other than that,
there's
I
a
love
lot of that going around
the U.S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you should come and visit once in a while. But actually, I met you in the U.S. So we met, I don't know what year that was, in Boulder. I don't even know what you were doing here. Do you remember? Do you remember when I met you up at the University of Colorado?
I was shown a film, and I think it was Jerusalem, the East Side Story. And you came to the screening. Hmm. Yeah. It was in University of Colorado, Boulder.
Right, right. So, yes. And then, so that is a way to introduce that you are a filmmaker, a director, a writer, a producer of documentary films. And I'm wondering, there's so much, I have all these spots of your life that I don't know anything about. Like, how did you learn to be a filmmaker? Did you go to school for it, or did you learn this from someone else, or what was the beginning of that?
It was a dream since I was a child. And really what made me think of cinema as Palestine, I want to tell the story of my people. And I thought cinema is the best way to do it. And I remember when I was 12 years old, I asked my dad, it was my birthday. And he said, what do you want for your birthday? I said, a camera. I said, I can't afford to get you a camera. I said, well, you ask me, I want a camera. So he got me this plastic camera. It's just really frame. It's not functioning camera. You can't take picture. But I was so happy with that frame, and I will just keep practicing on my sibling how to take picture and how to do things. And when I went to the U.S., I went to study right away, but cinema study is a very costly study. You have to pay a lot of money. And it's not easy to get accepted also. But at the end, I start doing courses in the U.S., and that's how I got into cinema.
Was East Side Story your first film?
No, it was one before that called The Iron Wall.
That came before? Okay, yeah.
Yes, the Iron Wall was in 2005, and Jerusalem, I think, 2007.
How many have you done now? Because you've done quite a few more since then, and some I haven't seen. Like you did one in 2019.
Yeah, and the conflict, I think about six. But before, I did a lot of things commercial in the U.S., you know.
And I didn't know that.
Commercial.
Okay.
But the commercial, we don't usually count it. We do it just to make a living.
Yeah. Well, I think that counts too. I do want to, in a few minutes, get into the films, at least the documentaries that you've done about the conflict. Because honestly, I will say we need to be able to see them in the United States. I don't know how we go about that, and we'll get to that. And if there's a way to put links, there's a way to have screenings, whatever it takes. I just rewatched East Jerusalem and or East Side Story, it's called, right? East Side Story, which is a great name, by the way. That, I think, is a film that is more explanatory of the situation than maybe any I've seen. I mean, it's about East Jerusalem, but where you start that film about how, you know, from, I think you start with the Balfour Declaration, you start from way back, you take it all the way forward through, but the way that you explain it, there are so many films out there that you just get bogged down in the facts. Your films aren't like that at all. They are all emotion. They are all they're explanatory. So you get the story, but you also get the feeling. I don't know how you do this differently than other people. Sometimes you can just see the look on a person's. Very often, you'll shoot the look on a person's face as something's happening. You know, like an Israeli soldier is, you know, they're demolishing someone's home, and you show the people, the Palestinians who are being kicked out of their home and their home's being demolished. And sometimes it's just a fleeting look, and it gets all of it. It sums it all up. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you catch that.
In cinema, they teach you that everything we learn come through our senses, the five senses. Nothing else you learn outside your senses. So when you do film,
interesting,
I try to include as much senses as you can. You know, you have the picture, you can see, but you can't touch. You know, you can't feel. For me, I usually, before I film, I go and visit the scene a few times. And I have obsession with details. I like details. So I collect all the details there. And the camera is limited. It's not like the eye cannot see the whole scene. A camera only see what you focus on. Yeah. So I try to compensate for the things that the camera can't see, you know, by creating other shots that can go with the scene and give you the feeling. I mean, I remember in that film, it's an old one, but I still remember the day when we filmed the family of home demolition. It was very, very emotional day for me, for the cameraman. The kids went to school, and when they come home, the house was demolished. And the parents were discussing among themselves how to control the kids, how not to let the kids be shocked by the first scene. So they were talking about going and pick them up from school and talk to them. And at the end, they didn't do anything, and the kids showed up. And it was, the kids were speechless. It's just speechless.
Yeah.
And the parents don't know what to say. And finally, the youngest one, she asked, "Where are we going to stay tonight?" And everybody started crying. And that's when I think they start dealing with it. The conflict here is a heartbreaking. It's a heartbreaking on both sides. It's a big tragedy, and no one knows what to do about it. So what I try in films is to give alternative, to make people see. In the beginning, I was focusing mostly on my film and the Jewish community. I want the Jews to see it. I want to see them, what that means to the Palestinian. And it worked. I have many friends and many institutions, Jewish institutions, always invite me to show my films. Although they keep telling me it's the hardest to watch. But I think for them, I understand. Of course, they don't want to see themselves as the oppressor, and as the one who's committing all this tragedy. But that's the fact. That's the reality. And we try.
I think that's where America is right now for the first time ever. And it's actually one of the reasons why I did want to talk to you now. The current disaster that's happening in Gaza, it's the first time it has resulted in the first time I have seen since I first started going to your region in 1993. I went to Gaza for the first time. So it's been, 94, it's been 30 years. This is, and I've come back with many stories. I wrote a book about it. I've taught classes about it. I've taken students and, met you there. I brought groups there. In all the things that I've done, this is the first time that I start to see people are calling me, asking me, what's going on? Like people who never cared before. And I think I told you before we came on, blocks from my house every couple of weeks, we have huge, huge demonstrations, pro-Palestinian demonstrations. This is not normal, as you know. I mean, it used to be a rare thing. Now everyone has opened their eyes and starting to see the role that United States has played. So you say like you take your films to these Jewish organizations and it's hard for them to watch. I think it's getting hard finally for Americans to start putting together the role that we're playing and what's happening on the ground and starting to be a real healthy, honest and sincere curiosity about, wait, what happened before? And I think the time for your films may be now. This East Side Story we're just talking about, it's what's going to happen in Gaza. I mean, we already see what's happened in Gaza, but what comes next? It's always like, then what comes next? Because it just keeps going and going. And to understand now what has happened over 75 years and what's about to happen, that maybe we can change history, maybe, if we're all paying attention now.
It's about time,
it's
I think,
way
for
past
the U.S.
Time.
As I told you, I really believe it. I'm not saying that. I really believe it that most Americans are good-hearted people who would like to do the right thing. But unfortunately, there's so much ignorance in the U.S., so much ignorance in the conflict, so much ignorance in the origin of the conflict, what really happened. And the Palestinian has been really demonized in the American media. You can't really get the Palestinian story straight. I remember after October 7th, I did many interviews, and the first question, do you condemn Hamas? This is really how to start. Do you condemn Israel? And they all get silent. Why is it hard to condemn, you know, hard to condemn the occupier, but you're so quick to condemn the one who's under occupation? I am not, you know, a friend of Hamas. They're not really my cup of tea. And I don't really want to see them one day, you know, ruling the Palestinian. But I won't deny them, and I won't deny anyone who's under occupation the right to resist the occupier. It's a God-given right. If you're under unjust situation, you have to work to change it. But in the U.S., they don't really understand the basic of the conflict. And to be honest with you, most filmmakers, they don't like to go to the U.S. because it's so much to deal with, so much ignorance. I don't see it this way. I think I don't make films to convince people. I don't think I have the ability to convince people. But I think I might have the ability to create questions in their mind, to make them think. And it's their own journey. I think that's what's happening in Gaza now, because it was overkilled. It's just what Israel is doing. It's beyond the craziness. Over 30,000.
That's what it
has. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think now.
Yeah, we know, we can see what's happening. I think in the past, even, you know, prior generations, they couldn't really see. And listen, ignorance is a choice. Ignorance is a choice. It hasn't always been a choice, but for the last 30, 40 years, what's been happening there, if you don't know, it's because you didn't take the time, or you didn't want to know, or you just want to believe what someone, your politicians are telling you. I mean, I've known for 30 years. How could I know for 30 years and other people don't know that live right next door to me? It's a choice. It's also what you're exposed to, but it's what you allow yourself to be exposed to. And now maybe we're making a different choice because we see famine. We see intentional famine happening, beginning in Gaza. You know, we see starvation happening as a tool of war. That's hard to under, and we know that we're the ones funding this. This is hitting us. This is creating a curiosity now, and a not more than a curiosity. It's creating absolute revulsion. You know, we can't take that as a country, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw a young Palestinian girl holding a sign in English. And the sign said, the only thing that stands between the Palestinian and their freedom is America. It's telling that how the young generation start identifying their oppressor is the U.S. directly. They don't even look at Israel. Because it's to us, and especially after September 11, it becomes so clear. Israel cannot do this without America.
Since what? 2001 or 9/11? Are you saying since then?
No, I said the last thing since October 7. In October 7, the U.S. issued a statement before Israel. They issued a statement 20 minutes before Israel. And they right away, really? they send two aircraft carriers to the region. They supply them with all this sophisticated weapons. I don't know why do you need 2 tons bomb to bomb Gaza? I don't know why you supply them with white phosphor. And Joe Biden have the nerve to say, we're not sure if they use white phosphor. It's in display. It's in display. It's in the sky. Media filming it all over. And Biden is not sure if they use white phosphor in refugee camps.
Yeah.
And it was just the level of injustice this time, the level of injustice hurt Israel so much, exposes its intention. And you cannot keep hiding behind the victim card. You're not a victim anymore. Mm-hmm. You actually victimized another.
Yeah, something has changed in Israel that is so substantial over past incursions, even into Gaza. Not incursion is not the right word because it's way too soft, but something has changed. It's as though there's a madness there now that they don't care if the whole world is against them and they don't care how many people die. But I don't think it's just the army. I don't think it's just the leadership, because people on the ground, not all of them, of course, it's never all of them, but you see people are blocking aid to starving kids in Gaza. Listen, I understand 1,163 Israelis were murdered viciously, and now they've lost something like 250 soldiers. I mean, to most people, they say 32,000. That's quite a difference in numbers, if that's all you're going to look at. Is numbers, which of course is, you know, it's all horrible. It's all horrible to talk about. It's all horrible to think about. But something has changed. Something has shifted in that they don't care anymore. They're not trying to be the victim. They're not trying to hide their intentions. It's just out there now. It's naked, and we can all see everything. And even America. So I'm curious. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I was doing a tour in Europe, and I was showing a film. It's called Broken. It's about international law and about how the Palestinian took Israel to court over the building of the wall. And I noticed this time that people, they're not really paying attention to international law as they used to. Before, many people, I was one of them, I looked to international law like it's something like the religious
book. Something.
You know, yeah, like it's really holy and it's respected and it means a lot.
Yeah.
But when you go into it, it's a game of politics. It's a filthy game of politics. And it's really, international law was designed and created for the powerful. The U.S. been indicted twice to that court. Didn't even go. The first time was Nicaragua during the time of Reagan.
Oh,
they didn't show up in the court. Yeah. And nothing happened. They didn't even have the respect to go to the court.
Well, I just saw your film Broken again this week. And I had seen it before. And it is very disillusioning in terms of the International Court of Justice, because they also came to the conclusion that you showed in your film. It's a fascinating film about how it works in The Hague. I would just really encourage people to watch all your films. But East Side Story and Broken are very educational, like strictly people need to learn these facts. But Israel in your film, they had taken Israel to Palestine, I guess. I'm not sure who brought it to the court. I guess it was the PA, or I'm not sure who actually brought the case to Palestinian Authority. Okay, so they brought the case that Israel was building this security barrier, aka wall, on Palestinian lands. They weren't bringing to the fact that they were building a wall. That you can build a wall however tall you want on your own land and separate us and so forth. But when you build it on Palestinian land and you take land by doing that and you rope off extra land as they did. Anyway, that's what the case was about. Israel also did not show up, of course, right? They didn't show up, I don't believe, to that case. So same thing. Why would we go? Why should we go? And even though they found them guilty of taking the land illegally and building this wall, nothing happened. And just recently, they accused Israel of genocide, and nothing happened. So I don't even know why we have that. I don't even know why it exists. I don't know if anything, there have ever been repercussions. But I love that film, and I really want people to watch it.
You know, I'm not sure what will come out of the case of South Africa in the court. But I like it because there is some wisdom in it for whoever wants to see it, especially the Jewish people.
Mm.
The Genocide Convention was started by the Jews. It was a Jewish person who rallied the United Nations to consider genocide as a crime against humanity. He was a Polish Jew who lost most of his family in the Holocaust. And Israel was one of the first countries to sign to it. And now Israel is standing in court accused of being in genocide. So I think maybe it's a moment for them to stop and think, you know, that we gone too far. And you just... Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, the U.S. and Israel, they really made a joke out of international law. And these two countries single-handedly. Then, I mean, there is another court called the ICC, International Criminal Court. And this is a court with the teeth, you know, their decision implemented. And the only people who were in the court were African leaders. African leaders who were, you know, accused of genocide, you know, civil war and things like this.
Mm-hmm. Rwanda, I think.
So when are we going to see the white man there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you commit the crime, why didn't you, you know, stand in court and defend yourself? The U.S. will not even sign any of these agreements because it's they will not hand any of their soldiers or generals to the court to question them. And Israel is the same thing. Actually, after the decision in 2004, when the decision came out, the spokesman for the Israeli government said it will find its way to the garbage can of history, like all other United Nations resolutions.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm always.
He's right.
He's right. He's exactly right. That's what's so difficult. I mean, I can't remember the resolution, but in the number, I used to know this. But in 1948, they passed a resolution that refugees should be allowed to come back to Israel, back to their home. In 1948. So why are we surprised in 2024? When UN resolutions aren't followed, it's also a joke. You know, there is no international cooperation.
The irony behind that resolution for the refugees, I think it's 192.
You're right.
It was introduced by the American, by the Kennedy administration.
Oh. Really?
And the Kennedy administration put a condition, the recognition of Israel, for Israel to accept the return of the refugees.
Wait, how could that be though? Because his administration wasn't until the 60s, and I thought that resolution was in 1948 if it's the same one. Because right after they left, there was a resolution that they should be allowed to go back.
That was a generic one, but that was one in the 60s, where especially targeted refugees, and it was at that time was still many countries haven't recognized Israel. So that was to open the door for the recognition of Israel. And it was introduced by the American.
Resolutions are nothing. they don't mean anything. I mean, they mean something in the long arc of history, perhaps. But for the people living in the moment, Palestinians of 1948 have still not been able to go back to their home. So if you just start with that,
you know, I don't someone know. Under injustice condition don't promise them of justice. They want to see. They want to see justice. They like the
taste it, feel it, live it.
Yeah, I mean, my friend in Gaza, when I called them, of course, I mean, to add to their misery, they disconnected from the war. They don't know what's happening outside. So they always asking me, what is the war is saying about it? What is the American is saying what's happening to us? They just can't believe that the whole world just sitting there watching them.
I also can't believe it. I also can't. Everyone I know feels sick. Like, honestly, when I wake up in the morning, that is the first thought every day of my life since October 7th. And I have Israeli friends in Denver who are the same way. I have a friend who's Jewish, Israeli, pro-Israel, but every single day he said he's living at 50% strength, basically, living, working at 50% of, and nothing has changed here other than that. It's eating at our souls, you know, and it's so horrible that people in Gaza must think they don't care. They're just going on with their lives, and we are going on with our lives. That is the sin here. But what to do, you know, like what to do? Like, I think to myself, should I just say, I'm not going to pay my taxes? Like, I don't know how to have any kind of influence, you know, and we feel, and I'm sure you must feel, I'm going to ask you how you feel, impotent. There's no way to make, how do you watch people starve to death? It's already begun. Like 28 people starved in northern Gaza last week. It's a very real right now thing. And how do we act? What do we do? Besides put something on Facebook, you know, that's not acting.
Late at night here in Ramallah, we can hear the airplanes going into Gaza. We
really?
Can't see them, but we can hear the sound.
Oh.
In the beginning, we used to run to the windows and look from the windows. And right now, when we hear them, it just becomes silent. Even if there is like 100 people in the room, it's just they all become silent for a few moments. Because we know where they're going, and we know what they're going to do. And you could turn the TV, and the TV would tell you what happened. It's a...
Wow.
It's really eating up our souls. And we don't know what to do. We don't know what's the next step. And here in the West Bank is not a better situation than Gaza. I mean, for sure, Gaza's worse.
I've been wanting to get to that. Right. What has happened since October 7th?
I think, you have to look at Gaza and the West Bank in one piece. What is happening now, I think Israel saw an opening this time to finish the Palestinian issue. And what they're doing in Gaza, they're destroying the north and the middle of Gaza, and they cramming everybody in the south. And in the south, they literally 200 meters away from the Egyptian border. There is a fence there. So Israel just need to take the fence and the people will run into the Sinai Desert. And here in the West Bank, the game is to kick us to Jordan. The Jordanian army and the border to trying to stop that from happening. An Israeli minister threatening us every day. Some of the statement they start coming from the Israeli government is just amazing. It's amazing that a Jewish person will say things like this. You know, one of the minister wants to bomb Gaza
like
and nuclear. The other one, he's calling us the Amalek. You know, the Amalek, the story from the Bible. Strong, big people who is the enemy of the Jewish people. And according to the Bible, you should fight them all and you should kill them all, kill their kids, their animals, kill everything. And we hear that every day on mainstream media. Another minister, he said, Israel need to think of ways more painful than death to deal with the Palestinian. The Minister of Defense called us the human animals. And right now we can see it. There is 10,000 Palestinians who've been arrested since the October 7th. And that's just from the West Bank.
Mm. 10,000. And many have been killed. Many have been killed.
Killed about 600. In Gaza, there is thousands of prisoners. We don't know where they are. And some of the people who were released, the way they talk about the condition, the treatment there, it's a Guantanamo. It's worse than a Guantanamo. And it's that's why it's a moment of truth for America.
Yeah.
It's really a moment of truth. Do you want to be historically responsible for this? This would not happen without you, without your help. Israel is a very small country surrounded by a very hostile environment. The only thing is keeping Israel the way it is. It's America and the support of America and the American money. I mean, America received $15 million a day from America. Israel received $15 million a day. Yeah, the Israeli win the lottery every day. So why change? Yeah.
Well, America benefits also because it's our war. I don't know how much cash that we're giving Israel. I know for many, many years we were giving them, it looked like we were giving them money, but we were really giving them tokens to buy weapons from our weapons manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really that we're handing Israel cash. We're saying, here's $3 billion in credit towards the purchase of bombs and other weapons. So it wasn't, so it's not really like we're giving Israel money. It's like we're giving ourselves money. And that's really what's been happening for decades. It's our war machine. It's our economy. It is so true, though. And it is, yeah. It's not always easy to follow the money. So it's obscene at every level. But what is happening on the ground right now with, like, say, Hamas in the West Bank? I mean, is that an issue? Or not, is that an issue? Is there contention between Hamas and non-Hamas in West Bank, or is that just not really a
no? In the West Bank, right now, Hamas issue. is not that strong in the West Bank. They don't really have a big presence in the West Bank. In the West Bank, the biggest fight has been between the Palestinian and the settlers. The settlers now, by law, they all should be armed. If you, I think 17 and up, by law, you should be armed. So right now, I think we have about 600 people get killed in the West Bank. I think 1/3 of them was killed by the settlers, not the army. And the settlers, they attack Palestinian villages every day. They burn the villages. I mean, some of the footages, it really something from the book of Nazi Germany. It's a scene. I can't believe that the Jews will allow these scenes to happen. You know what it means to burn villages.
But this has been, I mean, it's been happening since 1948. It's not new. The things I've seen with my own eyes, the humiliation, and I have not been there that much. I've seen many horrific things. And when people are surprised by what's happening, I'm like, this has been happening all along. It's just there's cameras are out now and there's a little more focus on it. But this is not new. It's gotten worse and worse and worse.
And the Israeli this time, they so vulgar about it. They don't care. You know, the statement from them, the way they act, the way, I mean, the soldiers filming themselves in Gaza, talking about there is no innocent people in Gaza. You know, one soldier I saw wearing a t-shirt, and it show a pregnant woman, and he's pointing the gun at the pregnant woman. He said, one shot, he killed two. And it's videos going on social media. When the minister said we should bomb Gaza and nuclear bomb, and the other one said we should make Holocaust out of Gaza. He's the deputy chief of staff.
Oh, really?
Yes, he said we should make Holocaust out of Gaza. And you know, for me, I mean, I'm a student of history. I love to read history. And a lot of things happen throughout history. So I'm not surprised that a politician will come up with a statement like this. But what surprised me when a whole nation becomes silent. Yeah. Somebody is provoking the Holocaust. He wants to do a Holocaust for other people. And the Israeli society have nothing to say about that? That's the dangers. It's not a dangerous that one madman say horrible thing. It's how the society respond to that. And in Israel now, it looked like the whole society just moved to the right. They want to get rid of the Palestinian in any way, any shape, in any price. Just get rid of the Palestinian. They want to finish that.
Yeah. And, it feels a little vigilante. Yeah.
And, you know, for the Palestinian, is it become a survival game. You know, I ask myself every day, like, what the hell I'm doing here? Sometimes
well,
it's really...
I was going to ask you.
Sometimes it's really difficult to make a living, to pay your rent. There is economic strangulation in the West Bank, systematic, something deliberate.
For a very
but,
long
you
time.
Know, I mean, I'm 61 now, and you know, and I spend all my life working for this. I'm not going to run away in the last 15 minutes. You know, I will stick it to the end and see what's going to happen. I am not a nationalist. I'm not Islamist. I, you know, nothing of these things that motivate me. What motivate me really, it's injustice and human right. If you show me oppressed people anywhere, if tomorrow the Palestinian will oppress the Jews, I will be in Tel Aviv defending the Jews against the Palestinian. So if you have that conviction, it helped you to make your decision. You know, I'm staying until I see an end to this one. Although my kids keep calling me crazy, like, well, what are you doing there?
Well, and your kids that are in the U.S., you mean? Yeah, because you have American citizenship. Maybe people, I don't know if we talked about that during this conversation yet, but or if we that was before we came on. But you could move to the United States. You could probably move a few different places if you wanted to. And you have children in the United States.
Could go. I have a very good job offer in Germany. But Germany, it's the last thing on earth that I want to be in now. To be in Germany.
Really?
The German, they become as crazy as the Israeli when it comes to this. They really want to.
Really?
It's like they want to. Yeah, I mean, they 100% on the Israeli side. They supporting them with money and guns.
I don't think that's a known fact. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Look, for the Palestinian, and especially after October 7th, the story become very simple. Israel is a nothing but a watchtower for Western imperialism. It was created by the British, financed by the German. The French made it a nuclear country, and the American adopted. And whenever something happened to Israel, all these four countries come together. and defend Israel.
What about now?
The French,
you were just there.
American,
you were just there. On... Go ahead. Oh, I'm just saying you were
I'm
just
sorry,
in Europe.
I
know we're cutting out a little bit. You can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. You were just in Europe showing broken in different, I don't know what countries you were in. Is right now with what's happening in Gaza right now, is there still full support for Israel and the countries that you were visiting?
And not the people. Not the people. The people with the Palestinian. But the government, yes. I mean, I was in Italy, and Italy now it's almost fascist government. And in their media and their talk and the Italian, they would tell you we run by the fascists. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The French, they have so much, joint venture with the Israelis and a lot of business and you know, things like this. Mm. And the British, the British and the American, they have a position. They haven't moved since 1948. They're still under the same position. And there were a comedy show here. It shows the news and how the America react. It's always their statement, really. Israel have the right to defend itself. And they can't. They change the logic. They change the logic of life. Like, since when the occupier who has the right to defend himself? What about the defenseless people who being occupied?
I think it's changing. I think the sands are shifting in the United States. Did you see, I don't know if it means anything to you at this point at all, but to see the top Jewish American person in Congress, Chuck Schumer, head of the Senate, saying that Netanyahu should step down, that they've lost their way. Did you see that, or is that, has that news been?
Yeah, it was a big news.
It's a shift. It's a much bigger shift than I think people get yet. It's huge, and he didn't do that without Biden's blessing.
You know, I mean, to be honest with you, that shift might be too late for the Palestinian. But for me personally, I love it. America is too huge to be on the side of the oppressor. It will destroy the whole world if America keep doing this. The American, they like to call themselves the leader of the free worlds and defending of a human right. Practice it. Practice it. Please practice it. If you practice it and you fear, we will have a better world. We will have a better life than this. But, I mean, the American hypocrisy now in the Middle East, no one believed the American anything. And many people, by the way, here, many intellectuals, they're talking about how to separate the American government from the American public. And all the demonstration that happened there, it make the news here.
Still
and
happening.
People talking about there's people in the street and they doing this. But it's... I'm sorry to tell you, the American ignorance, it's killing lots of people.
Mm. Well, as I said, it's a chosen ignorance, but it's changing. And it takes people, it still takes courage to speak up, less than it used to take. But it still takes, because look at half the country is still going to support Trump, and Trump will absolutely destroy Palestine. In a heartbeat. So everything's really on the line in our country, how it's going to be going forward for us, but also how it's going to be going forward for Palestinians, for Palestine. I mean, do you think there is a potential happy ending to this story in Gaza? Do you think that, I mean, not for the people who live there now, but I'm talking about for future generations, do you think this could be the thing that resolves and brings statehood for Palestine eventually?
Yeah, look, It's very difficult to find hope now. You have to really work hard to find hope. And sometimes you have to deceive yourself a bit to find hope.
Yeah.
But for me, I can't live without it. Change is the only constant thing. Nothing stays the same. Everything keeps changing. The biggest empire ever exists in the history of humankind, the Roman. Where are they? They're gone.
Yeah.
The empire that changed the face of this region, the Ottoman Empire. Where are they? They're gone. So the Israeli would not be
the British
exception.
Empire.
Yeah, or the British, right. You know, the sun never set down in its colonies. There is no occupation lasted forever. It's the question is just how many people gonna die, how many people gonna pay the price for this before we reach agreement. Be honest with you, for me now, you might be surprised. My biggest challenge right now is how not to hate.
How not to hate?
Yes.
Well, I'm not surprised at all. That sounds exactly like you.
This is really this is my biggest challenge every day.
Because you lose something of who you are when you cross that threshold.
You no longer lose you. Yeah, I mean, it's okay if I lose the country, but I don't want to lose my humanity.
Yeah, I don't think you will. But you didn't answer the question, which the question of whether you think that statehood will emerge from this, or you know, something good, something that I don't see how it can't. This is a watershed moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for the Israelis, this time it shake their confidence in themselves and their system. And they start seeing the Palestinian as a problem is not going to go away.
Yeah, finally. Yeah.
So hopefully that will create a new reality in their mind that, you know, on a personal level, if we think there is some problems just not going to go away, we get serious about it. We get serious about trying to find a solution for it, because now we realize it's not going to go anywhere. And I see a sign of that. But right now, the Israeli society is just wild. They're so right-wing. They're so scared. Look at the Jewish mind is a very scared mind based on their history and their persecution. It's almost phobia.
Yeah.
What's happening here? It's so easy to scare them. It's so easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember one time I was in a conference and an Israeli general was explaining to us that how the Jewish fear, the Israeli really fear the Palestinian. I said, you know, general, he's an ex-general. I said, you know, how can I go to Gaza and explain to the kids of Gaza that the guy in the F-16 is afraid of them? You're bombing them day and night, and you want to convince them that you're scared of them? He said, maybe that's the tragedy, because we are.
And how
can you justify this to the Palestinians? How can you make them really understand that the Jews are afraid of them?
Listen, the thing I have learned, if nothing else, over all these years and all the Jews I have spoken to about this is how real that fear is still. And maybe it is a genetic passed down through your, you know, and I hope this doesn't happen to the Palestinians, but some of it will. This becomes part of your DNA. Fear becomes part of your DNA. And what happened in the Holocaust, because it is existential, because they were on the road to being completely annihilated from the earth, this is going to take hundreds of years, if anything, to heal. And you know, I think even in the book I wrote, I had the saying that for how long will Palestinians, how long must Palestinians pay the price of Hitler's sins? You know, how long must that be? That may be infinity, but I think they may now also realize that until Palestinians have their own security, that Israel will not have its own security. And maybe that realization has finally started to creep in, even though it looks nothing like that right now. I think at some level, you know, things happen so long under the surface before they show in everything. And so it makes sense to me that they are understanding this now, despite what's happening in Gaza. I think it's a long road, but I my gut sense has always been, even since October 8th, that this is the beginning of a major shift. Didn't know how big it was going to be, but that's my hope and my prayer.
I hope so. But the biggest problem now, it's recognition. The Israeli, they don't see us. We don't exist. Even when they talk about the territory, they call this area here Judea and Samaria.
I know.
You know, the biblical name.
Yeah. I know.
You drive in the West Bank. I drive from Ramallah to Jenin. I don't see any sign in Arabic. All the signs in Hebrew, with Hebrew name. Yeah. Hebrew, I mean, they want to change everything, and they operating, we fighting you, but we don't see you. We scared of you, but we don't see you. And how can you fix that one?
I don't know. It's like the psychology is beyond everyone's comprehension. Nobody can understand the psychology or handle it. It's hard to change one person, let alone an entire people. Well, let me ask you, are you working on a film now, and are you thinking of, I mean, this is right in front of you happening. You must be thinking of how to record it, how to understand it on film.
Believe it or not, I'm a bit of a weird mind. Although the conflict and everyday atrocity is taking my time and my energy, but the film I'm working on is on the Holocaust.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm working on a film on the Holocaust. The Holocaust in the Arab world. Yeah. It's a whole chapter completely unknown to the whole world. Do you know there was concentration camp in the Arab world?
Where?
In Morocco.
The airport, did you say?
In the Arab world.
Who was running the concentration camp, and who was in it? Or who was, this is was past, right?
The Nazis.
In the past.
And who was in it was Jews and
Arabs. Oh, no. So you're talking about during World War II?
Yes.
Oh, no.
In Morocco, I went and visited the site. The building is still half standing. Yeah. How the Muslim and the Arab saved the Jews of Algeria when the Nazi came there. The mayor of Tunis, he was hiding 62 Jewish women in his basement. And his biggest problem was how to feed 62 women. Yeah. And without, you know, bringing attention to yourself. And here, every year, Israel commemorate the Holocaust. And you know what happened to us when Israel commemorate the Holocaust? They put us under curfew. So it's like, how can we recognize your tragedy? Yeah. Holocaust is not being taught in a school here. It's not in media, it's not in school books, it's not in films. But people understand it. People know it. But they're not given the chance to see it, to sympathize with you, to have some empathy. Give them a chance to have empathy. Maybe if they understand fully your background, maybe they will have a better understanding of who you are now. But stop using the Holocaust to oppress them. Right now, they're using the Holocaust to oppress the Palestinian.
Wow.
So the film is in that area. Yeah. It's half of it really introduction to the Arab world of the Holocaust. This is really what happened. Yeah. And the second half is for the Israeli, like, you need to change tactic the way you use the Holocaust. And it's really, really for your own benefit.
Really fascinating. How far into the filming and so forth are you, filmmaking?
I'm still in the research. I'm having a hard time finding money for it. Whenever I approach any European producer, oh, fascinating. But they look at you and said, you're Palestinian, right? Yeah. And for them, it's a scary idea to handle the Holocaust to a Palestinian. Yeah. They're afraid of how Israel will respond to it. But in the end, I will find a way to make it happen. It's a project close to me personally. I wanted to do it.
There's someone out there to finance this, you know. There is. There's always someone out there to finance something. If it's true, and if it's not hateful, and if it's educational, and if it's true, to say that again. Then there's someone there to fund it, and it needs to see the daylight. Honestly, we need to see your films, your old films. I mean, why can't we see them? Why is it so hard?
It's not hard.
In the United States.
I put most of my work on YouTube, but you know, sometimes I have like a production company and they have rights and I can't. Just put it on social media. But for me, it's I love open source. You know, everything should be available. Mm-hmm. But when you have production company, like that last one broken, I have a Swiss production company, and I've been working hard to convince them to put it on the, you know, on YouTube. But you know, they want
Netflix.
To make money.
Netflix.
Oh, Netflix,
okay,
yeah.
Have them do... Why not? What's wrong with Netflix? There's many good documentaries on there, and that reaches more people in the West than you can imagine. It's... It feels critically important to me. It really does.
Yeah.
Because
actually,
unless you can find out...
Yeah, I would love to do a tour in the U.S. now. It's just I haven't been there for a long time, and I kind of lost most of my connection there. So I just need to find an organization or something, someone to sponsor a tour. And I would like to do a tour in the U.S. In Italy, also that short film for the Patriarch was really very effective, maybe because they're Catholic, you know, and he's Catholic, they connected with him. Mm. But it's been very effective in Italy. He has a strong message. I don't know, have you watched it? The
you
people
know,
by Chia.
I know I don't think I did, which is so strange because I was going to interview both of you and I started watching it, but I think something happened. I feel so bad. I don't even know what to say. I'm going to watch it as soon as we hang up. I've seen all the other ones again twice, and I haven't seen... No, but why would I not?
That's
How
okay.
long
You're
is it?
You're a busy woman. You're also trying to change the world.
No, it's not that. I think that would be really welcomed in the United States. There's a lot of Catholics in the United States still. And, you know, why not? It's a good entree. But I think East Jerusalem is also very, East Side Story is also very important. Listen, I don't want to, I know you've been, we've been talking over an hour. I wasn't going to keep you that long. Although it's been fascinating, and it really, really has been. It's been a good, it's been a good way to see it through your eyes. It's different than anyone else's eyes. And the fact that you have hope, you know, it's like Jane Goodall says, without hope, there really is no hope. So you have to hold on to hope, and you know, we're counting on you for that. So don't let go of that very precious commodity.
No, I will.
And I'll help you. I was going to say, I'll help you in the United States. We can find people to sponsor. There's always people. There's money and there's people, and so, you know, we'll talk. And people are more curious now than they've ever been. They're more curious than they've ever been.
Yeah, I think
so.
I mean, I think we can put like broken the Iron Wall, the Patriarch in Jerusalem, 4 films, and people could choose which film they would like to show. And you know, I noticed from my last trip, like my old film is more valuable now than the time when they come out. People now more interested in hearing the story, knowing the story.
Well, I mean, if they were getting more interested before, think about it now. Now that everyone is wanting to understand what we're paying for, that's it's important now.
Well, I'll send you all 4 films. And if you think of any organization that we can partner with, I'm ready to do it.
Okay. I'm on the job.
All right.
Stay safe, okay? Are you safe there? Do you feel safe? Are you worried about talking about this on film or, you know, on a podcast? I do feel like this is a okay things for you to say and you won't be harmed or arrested.
Just like I work hard every day not to hit them, I also work hard every day not to be coward. You know, we have to speak the truth. And if the truth gonna lead you into trouble, be it. You know, I try not to, you know, I'm too old for jail now. Try not to go there, but if it comes, it comes. What to do, you know?
What to do? I don't know. You're doing everything you can. Mohammed,
yes.
It's lovely to see you. Lovely to talk to you. And I'll see what I can do.
Same
and you,
as here.
You just
and
keep I'm, doing everything I, that you're doing.
Yeah. And I really want to tell, I really, really like what you're doing. You, what I call a healer, and we need more healer in this world. We're in trouble. We're in a deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
So we need more good people like you who's doing a good work. And I hope to see you soon.
I'm not. Okay. Thank you so much. Shukran. Right. Take care.